Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. It's November 4th, 2021. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. Let's get to the docket. First, the Kyle Rittenhouse case. The judge schools the jury and the lawyers on the rules of evidence. We've already had a juror dismissed. And now there's some new video that, well, kind of helps the defense. I wonder why we hadn't heard about it before. Helena Hutchinson's husband prepares for a wrongful death lawsuit. Letitia Stauch has court today. Will it be a delay or a trial? Ahmaud Arbery, the judge says the defense used discrimination in selecting the jury, and yet the case goes forward. We'll explain why. And then finally, our dumb criminal short. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. The channel where an actual practicing criminal defense attorney explains the facts, the procedures, and the law to cold cases and current actual cases. Now, if you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe button, hit that little bell so you receive notifications when we go live or put up new content, and as always, leave us a comment below. If you're unable to watch us on YouTube or Facebook, you can always download us on all of your favorite podcasting apps like Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Audible. All right, let's support the people that support Crime Talk. Please go to the link, crimetalkprep.com, and claim your 3 months of an emergency food kit. And in today's world of supply chain shortages and changing rules, you really just don't know what is going to happen next. You need to be prepared for anything that could possibly happen. Go to crimetalkprep.com. You'll receive $100 off the best-selling three-month emergency food kit. Listen, this food stays fresh for up to 25 years with proper storage, and it provides over 2,000 calories per day. That's enough to keep you going in any sort of an emergency. Go to crimetalkprep.com. You'll be happy that you did. First on the docket, the lead prosecutor in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, Thomas Binger, played a video that contained an audio track. And in the recording, a narrator from the Rundown Live indicated that he was present at the time of the recording with a, quote, bunch of militia in Wisconsin, and described the vandalism of a car dealership the previous day. Defense attorney Mark Richards said the track contained editorialization and should neither have been played nor continue to be played before the jury. Now, Binger said both parties had consented to the authenticity of the recording, and he said the person who made the recording could easily be subpoenaed for confrontation purposes. Well, which is what, right? Well, that's where the Judge Bruce Schroeder stepped in. He said, without mounting much of an argument under the rules of evidence, Binger said he would simply play the recording and turn up the volume when Rittenhouse himself spoke. Now, the words of a defendant are admissible at trial, even if a defendant does not testify. That's called an admission. Well, Schroeder seemed satisfied with the proffered resolution, but proceeded to lead the jury through a historical retelling of the genesis of the modern rules of evidence. The judge was present for the entire discussion about the recording, despite Binger's multiple requests to approach the bench or handle the discussion in another manner. The judge told the jury that he said he had studied evidence last century and sought a prop of printed materials described the thickness of his evidence law book from law school. He said the big picture lesson was that the hearsay rule was the most murky portion of the rules of evidence, as if teaching a law school course. The judge correctly stated that the hearsay rule contains both exclusions and exceptions. He then discussed why the rules say what they do. He stated, quote, so many things that may seem to be the untrained ear to be hearsay are not, and some things that don't seem like it are. This is from the judge. He summarized, hearsay is a rule which says that a statement of a non-testifying person cannot be offered to prove the truth of the matter asserted, which is asserted in the statement. In other words, a statement introduced into evidence has to be under oath and it has to be subject to cross-examination. And that's not true of statements that are made by somebody who is not here while testifying as a witness. So this person who's describing this thing that they talked about, the judge said, the person of the video is not subject to the rules of the court. Therefore, the statements cannot be used as evidence. Schroeder was taking a long way around admonishing the jury that it should not rely on the brief statements it heard on the video. He continued with his monologue saying that this is a biblical reference, but he said St. Paul, when he was put on trial, and he said it was over in Palestine or Israel, he stated at the time, and he was accused of some illegal activity. And he was a Roman citizen, which is not common, but he happened to have been a Roman citizen. So he had rights that we share now as Americans. They tried to put him on trial with evidence from what was being repeated by somebody who wasn't there and under oath. So where are the witnesses against me? He says, I'm a Roman. I have a right to confront my accusers. They should be here. And so that led actually his voyage to Rome to have his case heard before the emperor. So it's an ancient rule. It's strictly enforced in the criminal courts for obvious reasons. The judge then went on to say that what we're talking about here is if the person who is making this descriptive material is here and can be put under oath and can be cross-examined, then it's admissible. But otherwise, it's not admissible through the officer that was testifying. Now, Schroeder was referring to a detective who was on the stand who introduced the video. He then went on to explain the exception to the hearsay rule, which allowed the statements of Rittenhouse to come in at trial. Schroeder didn't mention it, but the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination also has semi-religious roots. The actions of individuals, alleged, you know, their crimes, were historically governed by government or civil authorities, right? The kings, the emperors, the governors, and judges. However, the inner workings of a person's soul were the realm of religious authority in those days of antiquity. And that's why defendants cannot be required to unburden their souls, or in other words, testify against themselves before a modern criminal court. Now, Binger resumed playing the recording, but not without additional objections from the defense. Now, early in the morning, the judge also dismissed a juror who made an inappropriate joke about the police shooting of Jacob Blake, which was kind of the root of all the rioting. Well, Judge Schroeder talked to the prosecutors and the defense without the jury present to discuss the matter involving juror number 7's purported joke on Thursday morning. Why did it take 7 shots to shoot Jacob Blake? The alleged juror allegedly said. The lead prosecutor, Binger, said he heard the purported joke fourthhand, but understood its phrasing another way. It was something to the effect of, why did the Kenosha police shoot Jacob Blake 7 times? Binger recalled being told the juror had asked, it's my understanding that the rest of the joke was because they ran out of bullets. Well, the juror was brought into court to answer questions on the record before the judge. And the judge asked, are you comfortable repeating what the joke is, or do you just want to leave it alone? Juror number 7 apparently didn't think it was that funny and said he didn't want to repeat the joke when called to answer it under oath. Though the comment was not audible on live feed, the judge apparently was not amused. Let's talk about this for a minute. First, the court is explaining the rules of evidence, hearsay. It's very important. We've talked about this before here in Crime Talk. All right. It's not what you think the evidence you have. It only matters what's actually admissible. So when people speculate and say, oh, I heard it from this person who heard it from this guy who knew a buddy who had this to hear what somebody said, completely admissible. That's about 4 layers of hearsay. So particularly in a criminal trial, the defendant always has the right of confrontation. And so those statements are not going to come in unless the person who actually made the statement is present to testify and subject to cross-examination. Classic rule of hearsay. You can always think about it. If the person on the witness stand is going to try and testify as to what somebody else said, that's hearsay. You can always remember that, okay? And it applies not just to comments made by individuals, but, well, in audio recordings as well, like videos. So if you have a conversation being recorded, unless it is of the defendant and you can authenticate the defendant's voice on there, you have to bring both parties in to talk about that, or it is hearsay. All right. Now the judge, I'm telling, and this is why a trial is a completely unique animal in every regard. You never know what is going to happen. You can think things are going really well, and then you have a juror that makes an inappropriate, off-color joke, but guess what? Somebody did the right thing and they reported it. The judge basically let the juror go because it shows bias, obviously, against the prosecution. Listen, both sides are entitled to a fair trial, and that's what this judge is striving to do. So matter at the end of the day, win, lose, or draw, both sides can say they had a fair trial. Next at the Rittenhouse trial, a new FBI infrared aerial surveillance video played during the Rittenhouse trial provides a unique angle into the final moments before the teenager fatally shot Joseph Rosenbaum. The infrared video, although it's pretty grainy and shot from 8,500 feet overhead, shows Rittenhouse hustling along a sidewalk and passing Rosenbaum, who is positioned next to a cluster of parked cars. The video shows the two stop and interact, and Rosenbaum, who is unarmed, then begins to run towards Rittenhouse, who is armed with a rifle. Rittenhouse then runs away from Rosenbaum before the teenager ultimately turns and shoots him four times. Now, Richards argues that Rosenbaum was in hiding as Rittenhouse arrived at the parking lot, which is what the detective confirmed, apparently. Now, Rittenhouse slows down in the video, and there appears to be some kind of exchange, but there's no audio from that particular interaction. Other videos from witnesses on the ground show Rittenhouse could be heard yelling, "Friendly, friendly, friendly," at this point. And it does not dissuade Mr. Rosenbaum. That was asked by Mr. Rosenbaum from Richards. He said, yes. Rittenhouse continued to move in the same direction he was moving previously, and Rosenbaum starts to chase Rittenhouse. Now, videos taken from the scene from other witnesses show Rosenbaum threw a plastic bag at Rittenhouse, but he was otherwise unarmed. Now, these other videos show that a different person fired a gunshot in the air seconds before Rittenhouse fatally shot Rosenbaum. That initial shot was fired by Joshua Zeminski, according to the detective. Afterwards, Rittenhouse fired four times at Rosenbaum. There were another three shots afterwards, and the video shows that, but Howard, the investigator, said, he still does not know who fired those shots. Now, Zeminski was separately been charged with disorderly conduct using a dangerous weapon, arson, obstruction officer, and he has pled not guilty. Now, a criminal complaint says he admitted to firing a warning shot in the air that night. This is some graphic videos have been played for the jury. The videos, some of which were, like I said, graphic, came from different angles and from a variety of witnesses at the scene. Now, the first batch of these videos showed the first shooting in which Rosenbaum chased Rittenhouse and threw the bag. A gunshot then went off, and Rittenhouse then shot Rosenbaum four times. Prosecutors showed the graphic video of Rosenbaum lying on the ground with a head wound as people tried to provide medical aid. Now, while the video was playing in the courtroom, Rittenhouse's head was pointed downward, not watching the video. Prosecutors then played different video of people who pointed out Rittenhouse as he ran from the shooting scene and yelled that he had just shot a man. A crowd started to chase Rittenhouse, who fell and then fired more rounds. This is all on video, remember. In one video taken earlier in the night by the Daily Caller editor Richie McGinnis, Rittenhouse said he was out on the streets serving as a medic and that the other armed individuals were there to protect him. Rittenhouse said, quote, "Our job is to protect this business, and part of my job is also to help people," end quote. "If there's somebody hurt, I'm running into harm's way. That's why I have my rifle, because I need to protect myself, obviously." Now, Kerry Washington, who live streamed the unrest in Kenosha last August, testified at the start of Wednesday as prosecutors played a video he took on the night of the shootings. He testified that Rosenbaum had been acting erratic and Rittenhouse was chain smoking and appeared very nervous that night. Detective Howard testified that he examined Rittenhouse when he turned himself in the day after the shootings, and Howard noticed that Rittenhouse had a half-inch scratch above his left eyebrow. Now the small cut on the inside of the lower lip as well, a 2-inch scratch below his left collarbone, some redness on the right side of his belly button, a 2-inch scratch on his left arm, redness on his right forearm, redness on the tip of his right thumb, a scratch on his back near his left shoulder blade, and 2 bumps on the back of his head. The trial for Kyle Rittenhouse is getting very interesting. Once again, we have a very good judge who understands the rules of evidence, okay? And you would be surprised how many judges do not, and they allow in stuff that shouldn't come in. So this judge seems to get it. Hopefully he's going to give both sides a fair trial, and they'll come up with what they deem to be the appropriate decision based upon the evidence and not what they've heard or read from outside the courtroom. All right, next on the docket. I told you the other day, people are starting to point fingers. Well, now they're all lawyering up. The husband of the cinematographer, Helena Hutchins, has lawyered up and is preparing a wrongful death lawsuit. Matthew Hutchinson's retained the services of Panish, Shea, Boyle, and Ravaputi, according to the LA-based law firm. The firm's website says its attorneys specialize in personal injury and wrongful death litigation. The lawsuit will be filed on behalf of Helena's spouse and their child, and there will be multiple defendants. The Santa Fe County District Attorney and the Sheriff's Department continue to investigate Helena's death. And while no criminal charges have been announced, they say all options are still on the table. Helena is survived by her husband, Matthew, and their 9-year-old son, Andros. The law firm had no comment beyond saying that, well, they were on the case. As we previously reported, the Rust Productions insurance policy limits payout for death or injury on the set was up to $6 million. That's a total for any and all injuries. And you have to remember, Joel Souza, the director, could also file a claim for his injury from the shooting. Now, after the explosive interview insinuating disgruntled Rust crew members may have planted a live round in the prop gun that killed the cinematographer, the lawyer for the lead armorer on the set revised their claims a little bit about how long the weapon had been unattended. On interviews on the Today Show with the New York Times, lawyers representing Hannah Gutierrez-Reed claimed that the prop gun had been unattended for 2 hours during a lunch break. But hours later, the New York Times reported the attorneys changed their claim, saying the prop weapon had been left alone for a maximum of 10 minutes. The rest of the time, the weapon had been locked up in a safe. And prior to putting them in the safe, Gutierrez-Reed loaded the gun with 6 dummy rounds from a labeled box. Now, those rounds are meant to be resemble real bullets, but contain no actual gunpowder. Now, another attorney for the armor, Robert Gerentz, told the New York Times that Gutierrez-Reed should not have been expected to guard the prop weapon at all times. Was there a duty to safeguard them 24/7? The lawyer asked. The answer is no, because there were no live rounds. Now, in the interview with New York Times, the attorneys added that Gutierrez-Reed asked her colleagues to monitor the cart where the weapons were laid, but noticed that they were unattended on multiple occasions. The report doesn't indicate whether. Lawyers also retracted their previous claim that a disgruntled crew member may have intentionally sabotaged the prop weapons. I think they're just kind of throwing stuff out there. Listen, Ms. Gutierrez-Reed has a real problem here, okay? She has a duty to guard those weapons. She has a duty to make sure real weapons or real rounds don't get placed into real weapons that can be pointed at real people, can really go off and really kill somebody and also injure someone with serious bodily injury. She has a duty. She breached that duty. Civil case, she was clearly negligent. The producers were probably negligent in the civil realm for hiring an inexperienced armorer. And at a civil proceeding, producers and the armorer and anybody else who had contact with those weapons who are named in that suit will all be pointing fingers at each other, saying, no, it was your fault. It was your duty. You breached the duty. What it really means is they're just going to decide who divvies up the money and how. And let's face it, Ms. Gutierrez-Reed probably doesn't have a whole lot of money. So if she has any insurance or she's covered by the insurance policy from the film, that'll be covered there. But on the criminal side of it, she's got some real problems as well. Because once again, you have to show a standard of care that is reasonable within basically that industry or how people would act within that community. clearly something went wrong. How the round got there, you know, the prosecution doesn't necessarily have to explain how it got there, but they have to show that the standard of care would have been that a competent professional armor would have made sure that that never happened. And they'll bring in an expert to say that she dropped the ball, and they will point blame on everybody else. Alec Baldwin, I still think he has some issues because, well, he should have checked that weapon. Why are you pulling the triggers, even with blanks, during a rehearsal of this nature where apparently you're just trying to get the best camera angle? We'll see. I think Gutierrez-Reed is probably the most likely to be charged. Alec Baldwin, he may get a pass. We'll just have to wait and see. But I think he is negligent as well. I tell you, I know some DAs would prosecute that case in a heartbeat because their position is you didn't follow the gun safety handling rules, the firearm discharged, whether intended or not. Whether live bullet or not, you are responsible. So a case could be made. I've seen it made before. It's probably one of the cases that haunts me the most because let's just say I think a jury got it wrong in that regard. All right. Next on the docket, Letitia Stauch. She has court. We're set for an arraignment this afternoon at the time of the taping of this. And obviously she's accused of killing 11-year-old Gannon Stauch, her stepson, who was 11 at the time. And she has to appear personally. As you may recall, she tried to not show up at the preliminary hearing, and the judge got a little freaked about that. Well, she's going to be there today. So the question is going to be, at the arraignment, will the defense seek an additional continuance to delay the arraignment, or will they simply enter a plea of not guilty, start that speedy trial clock a ticking, and let's have a trial here within 6 months? I say, let's go to trial. For those of you who aren't familiar with this case, investigators believe Letitia Stauch killed Gannon in their home near Colorado Springs on January 27th of 2020, and then drove the body to the Florida Panhandle, where it was eventually discovered in March of 2020. Now, Letitia Stauch faces several charges, including first-degree murder. And during testimony at the preliminary hearing, the results of Gannon's autopsy were disclosed by the coroner. And according to that report, Gannon's cause of death was listed as a gunshot wound and blunt force trauma to the head. Contributing conditions were sharp force injuries, and his manner of death was ruled a homicide. Susan Ignacio, the doctor who was the forensic pathologist in Florida, performed the autopsy. She noted a gunshot wound, one skull fracture, and 18 sharp force wounds, including those on the arms and hands, which were thought to be defensive wounds. Now, the Florida law enforcement officer said that the gunshot wound was in Gannon's lower left jaw area, and the projectile recovered from his skull was sent to the El Paso County Sheriff's Office. A 9mm gun was recovered from Al and Letitia Stauch's bedroom, and an expert witness from the El Paso County Sheriff's Office testified that he believed that the 9mm gun was used to fire the rounds that were collected in Florida, particularly the one recovered from Gannon's head, was consistent with the firearm. Now, on September 23rd, the judge ruled that there was sufficient evidence presented by the prosecution during the preliminary hearing for the case to proceed the trial. Now, the district attorney for the 4th Judicial District and the lead prosecutor on the case, Michael Allen, anticipates Letitia Stauch will enter a not guilty plea, and they'll set the matter for trials and a motions hearing date prior to that. We will just wait and see because, as you know, Letitia Stauch is always full of surprises, whether it's trying to escape on her extradition back or that plot to escape from the El Paso County Jail as well. Next on the docket, the Ahmaud Arbery case. And it took a little bit of a twist. So after a very long jury selection process in Georgia for the trial for Ahmaud Arbery's killing, a panel of 12 people has been selected. Well, it consists of one black juror and 11 white members. And of the 16 total jurors selected, including the four alternates, five are men and 11 are women. The jury was selected after a 2.5-week selection process that ended with prosecutors for the state accusing defense attorneys of disproportionately striking qualified black jurors and basing some of their strikes on race. Well, the judge, Timothy Walmsley, said the defense appeared to be discriminatory in selecting the jury, but that the case could, in fact, go forward. The court heard arguments for more than 2 hours about why defense struck the potential jurors before Walmsley ultimately denied the state's motion and ruled that there are valid reasons beyond race for why the jurors were dismissed. Now, Wanda Cooper Jones, Arbery's mother, said as she left the courthouse that she was shocked that there was only one Black juror. Now, from the roughly 1,000 people who were summoned as part of the jury selection pool, fewer than half showed up. And the defense attorneys previously expressed concern over not only how many people didn't show, but also who was missing among those who did. It also appeared that white males born in the South over 40 years of age without a four-year college degree, sometimes euphemistically known as Bubba or Joe Sixpack, seemed to be significantly underrepresented, according to the attorney, Kevin Goh. The attorney for Travis McMichael brought up demographics again this week, stressing that the low turnout of people during the jury selection process meant the pool didn't fairly reflect the accused in this case, where the accused can't look across the courtroom and see persons that are similarly situated to themselves. Now, the jurors obviously must decide whether Gregory McMichael and his son, Travis, along with their neighbor, William Roddy Bryan Jr., are guilty of malice and felony murder. Okay, so let's talk about why would the judge allow the case to go forward if he believes that the defense was engaging in discriminatory practices? Well, there's a thing out there called a Batson challenge. And normally it's applied when the prosecutor is the individual trying to exclude a particular juror based upon race. And then the defense makes their Batson challenge. That's the name of the case, Batson v. Kentucky. And the court will then have to hear a neutral reason for why the prosecution decided to dismiss a particular juror. And they can say, well, Judge, I didn't like their answer. I didn't like their demeanor. I didn't like the way they crossed their legs when I questioned them. Okay. Most of the time, the judges are going to say, yeah, that's a neutral reason, non-race-based reason to exclude the juror, and they will be excluded. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if the prosecutor is trying to get rid of a particular race of individuals. Here we have the defense that's being accused of a discriminatory practice. Now, I've never seen really a Batson challenge made saying that the defense was engaging in such practice, but the court went through the same analysis that they would if the prosecution was making it, and apparently was ultimately satisfied that the reasons given by the defense were neutral and not based upon race. But what do we know? We know the defense is already saying that the Bubba juror or Joe Sixpack juror isn't represented. The prosecution and the victim's mother doesn't like the fact that there's only one Black juror on the case. Well, guess what? That means that we have a juror that basically, we hope, is going to make a decision based upon the evidence in the case and not based upon their Bubba Sixpack or Joe Sixpack mentality. We don't want that. We want the jurors to make the decision. I hope they will do that. Listen to the evidence, reserve judgment until they hear all the evidence in the case, apply the instructions that the law is given to them by the court to the facts in the case. If the prosecution proves their case beyond a reasonable doubt, find these men guilty. If the prosecution fails to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt, it would be those jurors' solemn oath and obligation to say not guilty. That's the way the case works, ladies and gentlemen. That's the way the law works. And we'll see how things come out in the end. Let's just hope both sides get a fair trial. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. But before we do so, here's our Dumb Criminal Short.
Crime Talk's Dumb Criminal of the Day.
A Florida man was arrested and charged for illegally carrying a gun after he accidentally shot himself with the gun in Highland Park. Police responded to the 700 block of Park Avenue West in Highland Park for a report of a person shot. Officers learned that Jalen McKinney, 26, had accidentally shot himself in the 700 block of Red Oak Lane while seated in his vehicle alone, according to police. Thankfully, no one else was involved in the incident, and McKinney was not seriously injured. Police said McKinney did not have a concealed carry permit for the gun and was charged with one count of aggravated unlawful use of a firearm. He was transported to jail, appeared in court, and was released after posting a bond.